Reading from the Jiva Dharma, the chapter entitled Jiva and Maya. Om Gyanatimarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Nayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from Sridhar Mayapur. Yesterday was Ekadasi, and I went with Jonathan Mahatma, who lives here, and Sai Sri Radhe and Ramila, who's from New Zealand. But anyway, I went for the first time. I never knew they had a Panch Krosh Parikram, just like in Vrindavan. Very beautiful. Went out into the country, and Parikram of Sridhar Mayapur, O Darya Dham. Now, with this... So, what I think we'll do is, because these sections are a little technical and the medium a little challenging for that. So, I think what I'm going to do is, I'm going to go back in the dialogue, just read the questions and summarize some of the answers. You know, and we'll catch up. So as you remember, the question at hand to Brajanath, who is this aspiring devotee, brilliant, previous logician, extremely sincere. He's now initiated, but he wants further education. And he had a lot of questions about why the... why the soul has to suffer. And it was a very elaborate discussion. It ended with describing the material world as a prison house. And the purpose of a prison house is to rectify people. And then described that the chains of the prison house are the modes of material nature. They condition one. It's like the prison house limits one's freedom. So in the same way, our freedom is limited here by the modes of material nature. Prakriti kriyamanaini gunai karmani sarvasha ankara unakartaha miti manyate. The conditioned soul is forced to act helplessly by the modes of material nature, which impel particular conditioned desires. And the soul is conditioned, and therefore they can't leave the world. Freedom is to serve God. That's our nature. That's our nature. Our nature, and just like a citizen's nature is in relationship with the government. And when they can't follow that, they're in prison. And they can't leave. So in the same way, when we can't follow God and love God and don't want that, then we're shackled. and we remain in the captivity of the shackle of the body, which is a product of the modes of nature. So then he asks, what sort of karma do the jivas perform while confined in the prison house? And he described that there's basically two types. One type of karma or activity is to fulfill our desire, and one type of karma or activity is to avoid suffering. So that's basically what we do here in the material world. Fulfilling desires. And fulfilling desires doesn't mean happiness if it's the wrong desires. It's like, you know, there's so many people who fulfill desires, but they're unhealthy and they don't empower the self, or there's no flourishing of the soul in them. So whether we act to fulfill our desires or to avoid the suffering that they cause, it's still actually all kind of suffering. And then Vrajanath asks, would Maya's purpose have been served if she only covered the jiva with the subtle body? And then the answer was, the gross body is required to fulfill the desires contained in the subtle body. And then he wanted to know, what's the connection between our karma and its fruits? Do our activities cause our fruits? Of course, in one sense, they do, but the ultimate sanctioning factor is God, who was all the fruits of karma. So karma, our activities, are not absolute. They're not absolute. And then they asked, well, would you said that karma is beginningless? Why have you said that? And explained it because this forgetfulness of the fact that I am a servant of Krishna, it does not originate in mundane time. It's not originating in the material world. So it's not originating in time. And that conception is kind of mind-blowing at the same time. Reasonable. Origins of existence are mind, whatever your conception of the body. Scientists think, no, it's not, our conception is not mind-blowing, there's this and that, but it's such a fantasy tale, more than actual the Bible, that there was nothing, and then there was a bang, and then everything was assembled, even though it's incalculably improbable. The order of the universe is incalculably improbable if you just believe in chance. So it's not, that's also a fairy tale. And then the fact that there's always been an omniscient God without any cause, without any beginning, and like, without any beginning means without time. Time is past, present, and future. There's no beginning. So that's also inconceivable. And then he comes to the point, what is the difference between Maya and Avidya? And Maya is God's energy, and Avidya is just one aspect of that energy in relationship to the jivas. But there's another aspect of Maya, which is called pradhan, which is in relationship to inert matter. Mundane inert world is originated from pradhan, where the jiva's desire to perform material activities originates in a vidya or ignorance. So he's created this thing, Maya Shakti, is to purify the jiva, and it functions by avidya and pradhan. And avidya works on the jiva, and pradhan works on inert matter, which is actually to facilitate the purification of the jiva. And then there's another division, actually, because once there's avidya, then there's vidya. There's knowledge in relationship to the jiva, which covers the jiva. And there's vidya, which liberates the jiva, the living entity. So vidya is auspicious activities, and then spiritual knowledge, and then devotional conceptions, and so many different understandings that liberate us from the influence of ignorance. Now, there's a vidya, or knowledge and ignorance. And then there's pradhan, which deals with the creation of the world. And Vrajanath is going to ask about pradhan. And that's a little technical. We'll read about it. So this is how so we get a little creation tattva. When Bhagavan's glance, represented by time kala, stimulates maya prakriti, it first creates the unmanifested aggregate of material elements that's called maha tattva. So, the glance of God by time, stimulating the maya shakti, it creates material elements. That's called Mahatattva. It's the storehouse, the aggregate of material elements. It's the aggregate. And he says, matter, dravya, is created by the stimulation of the faculty of maya called pradhan. So I guess the difference between Mahatattva and pradhan is the function of maya that begins to give shape to the material elements. So mahatattva is the aggregate of material elements, and pradhan gives shape to it. So false ego, ahankara, is born from a transformation of, and space is created from a tamasika, transformation of the false ego. It makes no sense to me, but I guess it doesn't have to make sense. It's just the way God does things, and we're being told. Air is created from a transformation of space, and light is created from a transformation of air. So air is a transformation of ether, and light is a transformation of air. Water is then created by the transformation of light, and earth is created by the transformation of water. This is how the material elements are created. They are called the five gross elements, panchamahabhutas. So I guess the thing there that we can grasp is that there is some kind of progression from subtle to gross. In other words, as the material world expands, it becomes more gross. It's more alluring. So first you have false ego, and that's the basic conception that it's a basic basic conception that attaches the soul to matter. So that's the first thing that becomes stimulated from the Mahatattva. Is the hankara, the material element that that becomes the distorted lens that delimits the consciousness of the living entity to a particular material conception. And then space or ether, you only have sound. Air, you have sound and touch. Fire, you have sound, touch, and sight. Water, you have sound, such type of sound, touch, sight, and taste. And then the grossest element, earth, which becomes a transformation of water, has the addition, it has fragrance. Now here, and the five gross elements are called the Pancha Mahabhuta. So we have Kala is time, stimulates Maya Kriti, and then manifests elements Mahatattva, and then stimulation of the Mahatattva by Maya. Then unmanifested material elements take shape as manifest, which is called Rudya. And then the Mahatattva begins to transform into Makara, kind of like a lens which distorts consciousness and gives a particular conception, and then subtle to gross. And the five gross elements called Shimabhutas. Now here, how the five sense objects, Pancha, Tanmatra, are created. So there's gross elements.
Maharaj.
Yeah.
You're breaking up a lot. It's unintelligible for me.
Okay, let's call the phone. Last time, I'll call the phone. Just wait a second, okay? Thank you, Gail. I'll call on my phone.
Okay. I'm back. So if you haven't heard, thank you, Gail. So I was explaining, again, there's an aggregate of material elements unmanifest called Mahatattva that's stimulated further to become manifest material elements. It becomes pradhan. Then from ahankar, there's a manifestation of false ego, which is a lens which delimits consciousness of the jiva. It's kind of like a pair of material. It's like a glasses or something. But it distorts one's vision to have an identification with a particular field of matter. And then we had five material elements manifesting, which is called Panchamahabhutas. And now they're going to describe how the sense objects, Pancha Tanmatra, with the sense objects, earth, water, fire, air, ether. And then there's five elements, then there's five objects, which is taste, which is sound, touch, sight, taste, and fragrance. Kala, time, stimulates the faculty of prakriti called avidya and creates the tendencies within the Mahatattva for karma and jnana. So somehow or other there's a division. We discussed it called avidya, and it creates a desire for material control and liberation. When the karma propensity of Mahatattva is transformed, it creates knowledge, jnana, and activities from sattva and rajaguns, respectively. Mahatattva is also transformed to become a hankara. Intelligence, buddhi, is then created from the transformation of a hankara. So from the lens or subtle conception, identification with matter, then buddhi is created, which gives us some kind of understanding of what's happening on various levels. Then sound, shabda, just a property of space, is created from the transformation of buddhi. So once buddhi is manifest, then you begin to have the sense objects, and you can begin to understand things through sound. And then the property of touch is created from the transformation of sound, and you can understand things through feeling. The property of touch, sparsha, is created from the transformation of sound and includes both touch, quality of air, and sound. So, in other words, each further gross manifestation of material elements has more and more varieties of sense stimulation, sound, and ether, and both ether and air. You can, so in ether you only have sound, but in air you have sound and touch. Prana, life, air, energy, oja, and strength, bala, are created from the quality of touch. From a transformation of touch, the property of form and color, rupa, is illuminating objects is generated. Fire has three qualities, namely form, touch, and sound. But when fire is transformed by time, it is transformed into the four qualities, taste, form, touch, and sound. When they are further transformed, the result is the five qualities in earth, which are smell, taste, form, touch, and sound. All the activities of transformation take place by the appropriate aid of the Purushana's form of consciousness. So somehow or other, none of this takes place. No activities can take place in this incredibly variegated aggregate of manifest matter unless there is the soul, some kind of consciousness. There are three kinds of ahankara, vaikarika, sattvika, tajasa, rajasika, and tamas. The gross material elements are from sattvika ahankara, and the ten senses are born from rajasika ahankara. There are two types of senses, those for inquiring knowledge, jnana, indriyani, and the working senses, karma, indriyani. the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and skin are the five senses for acquiring knowledge and speech. Hands, feet, anus, and genitals are the five working senses. Even if the five gross elements, pancha mahabhuti, combined with the subtle elements, sukshma bhuti, there is still no activity unless the atomic conscious jiva enters into them. As soon as the jiva, who is the localized particle within the ray of Bhagavan's glance, enters into the body made of Mahabhuta and Sukshma Bhuta, all the activities are set in motion. So nothing happens until also from Bhagavan's glance, into this body made of pancha mahabhuta, the five gross elements, and sukshma bhuta, which is the subtle body. Until it happens, no activities are set in motion. So now activities are set in motion. The satika and rajasika gunas become the function when they combine with the tamasika objects that are transformation of pradhan. One should deliberate on the functions of avidya and pradhan in this way. Well, a little bit technical, but it is one of the subjects of Krishna consciousness to understand the greatness of God through his manifestation in the material world, and to have the thorough understanding of it so we can understand our difference from it. So we should deliberate on this. And it should impact us to some spiritual action of detachment and from a desire to live in the real self. There are 24 elements of Maya. Now this, he's going to summarize. The five gross elements, Mahabhutas, namely earth, water, fire, air, and space. The five sense objects, namely smell, taste, form, touch, and sound. Five senses for acquiring knowledge. Five working senses, mind, intelligence, the chitta, and hankara. These are 24 elements of material nature. The atomic conscious jiva who enters into the body made of the 24 elements is the 25th element, and Paramatma Ishvara is the 26th. So this is Sankhya, philosophical analysis. And the whole purpose of Sankhya is to, when the map of the of all the elements are laid out, to understand that consciousness of the soul is different from them. Vajranath, please tell me how much of the human body, whose size is 3.5 cubits, 7 spans, is occupied by the subtle cover, and how much by the gross cover, and in which part of the body does the conscious jiva reside? The five gross elements, the five sense objects, Babaji Maharaj is answering, pancha tanmatra, and the 10 senses altogether compose the gross body. The four elements, mind, intelligence, chitta, and ahankara, form the subtle body or the linga sharira. The conscious jiva is the one who falsely relates to the body and objects related to the body as I and mine, and due to that misidentification has forgotten his true nature. He is extremely subtle beyond mundane space, time, and qualities. Despite it being very subtle, it pervades the entire body. Just as the pleasurable effect of a minute drop of Hari Chandan spreads all over the body and is applied to one part, so the atomic jiva too is the knower of Kshetrajna, the body, and the experience of its pains and pleasures. Vajana, if the jiva performs karma and experiences pains and pleasures, where is the question of Ishvara's authority? Jiva is the instrumental cause, and when he performs karma, Ishvara acts as the efficient cause and arranges for the fruits of the karma that the jiva is eligible to enjoy. Ishvara also arranges for the future karma for which the jiva has become eligible. In short, Ishvara awards the fruits while the jiva enjoys them. So, there's the question of Ishvara's authority is the question. Well, it arranges by karma all the fruits of activities. And it arranges the future karma. In other words, Ishvara is the authority. And he arranges for the enjoyment of the jiva. How many different kinds of buddha jivas are there? Okay, this is interesting. How many jivas? There are five kinds, namely those whose consciousness is completely covered, achadita chetana, those whose consciousness is partially covered, sankuchita chetana, those whose consciousness is blossoming slightly, mukulita chetana, those who's developed consciousness, vikasita chetana, and those with fully developed consciousness, purna, vikasita chetana. Vajanat, which jivas have completely covered consciousness? There are jivas with the bodies of trees, creepers, grass, stone, and so on, who have forgotten service to Krishna and are so engrossed in the material qualities of Maya that they have no trace of their sentient nature. There's only a slight indication of their sentience through six transformations. This is the lowest stage of the jiva's fall, and the fact is corroborated by the epic stories of Halya, Yamala Arjuna, and Saptapala. One only reaches this stage because of some grave offense, but only to be delivered from it by Krishna's mercy. So there's a stage where things are completely covered. And there's practically no trace of sentience. Even against trees, down to stones. Which jivas have partially covered consciousness? Beasts, birds, snakes, fish, aquatics, mosquitoes, and various similar creatures have partially covered consciousness. Let me just go on. I will go back next. Which jivas have slightly blossoming in consciousness? Conditioned jivas with human bodies. So there's those where one type of... So how many types of living entities are? Well, there's five. There's one type, the consciousness is completely covered, stones, trees, one's partially covered, birds, different animals, and it is blossoming slightly. And blossoming slightly are the human beings. And those human beings have two further states of consciousness. See, they can be slightly blossoming, that we discovered. They can have developed consciousness, which is called Vikasita Chetana, and those with fully developed consciousness, which is called Purna Vikasita Chetana. Generally, the human race can be divided into five groups: the moral atheists, moral theists, who have both morals and faith in Ishvara, those who engage in sadhana bhakti, and those who engage in bhava bhakti. Those who are knowingly or unknowingly atheists are either immoral or moral atheists. When a moral person develops a little faith in Ishvara, he's called a moral theist. Those who have developed theist. Those who have developed interest in sadhana bhakti, according to the tenets of Shastra, are called sadhana bhaktis. Those who develop some unalloyed love to Ishvara are called bhava bhaktis. Both immoral and moral atheists have slightly blossoming consciousness. Moral theists and sadhana bhaktis have developed consciousness, and bhava bhaktis have fully developed consciousness. Okay, so we have completely covered the stones. Then we have that's the various animals. And then human beings have three levels of consciousness. Those who are slightly blossoming are just human beings who are moral or immoral atheists. And then moral theists and practitioners of bhakti, they have developed consciousness, and bhava bhaktis have fully developed consciousness. So human race, because he asked what type of bodhijivas are, he said there are five types, and the first two are slightly blossoming, moral atheists, and then developed consciousness is moral theists and those who moral theists and those who practice sadhana bhakti, they have developed, and bhava bhaktis have fully developed. Now, interestingly, yes, how long do the bhava bhaktis stay bound in matter? Babaji, I will answer that question when I explain the seventh sloka of the Dasmula. Now it's quite late, so kindly return home. Arjunath returned home, contemplating all the tattvas he had learned. Thus ends the 16th chapter of Jivadharma, entitled Pramaya, Jivas and Maya. Chapter 17, Pramaya, Jivas, Liberation from Maya. Okay, anybody like to ask any questions?
That is settled on my phone.
I have a couple of questions. I'm not sure how coherently I can ask the first one, but I'll try. On the one hand, I hear that there's an atomic particle of the soul that is within the region of the heart of the living entity. And then I also hear, like I was reading recently in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, 11.11.1, where it states that we are not entangled factually, we're not entangled at all in matter. We just think that we are, basically. And even you,
well, that's
during
what
these...
what is entanglement?
The entanglement is the conception
state of mind, the
conception that we are these bodies. So
I'm making a statement.
Uh-huh.
I'm making a statement. There's no contradiction because what is entanglement? But it's the conception. But the soul is still the soul is still within the body. So it's encased within the body in one sense, but the bondage or the entanglement is its consciousness. And when its consciousness
right.
becomes pure, then even when it's in the body, it's not entangled. That's called a liberated soul, even in the body. So it's not the body that's the bondage, it's the consciousness.
Okay, so a liberated soul, even though a particle of his being is in the region of the heart, because he knows that he is not the body, he's not actually entangled in the...
It's mentioned actually in the Gita that it doesn't mean that there's not desires and thoughts, but one does not move by them. That's what liberated means. One is not moved by them.
Mm-hmm.
You can be abstracted from them. You can observe them. You can be mindful of them.
Uh-huh. Okay, so he is physically within the region of the heart.
He's physically within the body.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the other question was, I just want a clarification. When you're talking about the avidya acting on the jiva and pradhan acting on matter. So I'm just trying to get the conception straight and the correlation between these two things straight. You know, these two parallel things. I don't know. Even parallel. I don't know.
One second. I'll find it here. Pradhan is the shape of matter. It's unmanifest, material elements. Then it's shaped. That's pradhan. Then the soul identifies with them. That's false ego.
And it identifies it through the process of avidya.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Gail.
All right.
Anybody else endure the broken phone call to stay online?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
Okay, one of the stalwarts. Okay, good. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
Yeah, Govardhan. Hare Bhav. Govardhan Bhav. Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, anybody else? Okay, anyway, I'm going to have to head out and do the rest of my activities. Hare Krishna.